Okay, fun seekers, have we got something for you to chew on? We're going to spend some time talking about how we investors in mutual funds are being charged. And it's not particularly easy, part of that, I believe, in my humble opinion, although no one will admit to it in the industry, is that they don't really want you to know how you're being charged. But unlike, as we said, unlike insurance companies, unlike banks, by virtue of the Investment Company Act of 1940, mutual funds must disclose how you are being charged. Just in a matter that makes sure that you will never understand it. But, dear students, as members of Business 123, Introduction to Investments, Southwestern Community College, you're going to know how these fees are applied to investors. Because why? You're going to be the expert. At your 401k meeting, where the people in the three-piece suits with the Fucci shoes and the Armani suits. I don't know why they call it Armani. After you pay it, it's their money, isn't it? Anyway, they're going to try to snow you. I've been in the audience at Southwestern, at least, and they didn't realize who was in the audience. I started asking some questions that put them flat on their feet, but you're going to understand what's going on. You're going to be able to explain it to your fellow employees, your family members, and they're going to say, ooh, where did you learn all this? And what are you going to tell them? Right, Business 120. Okay, let's get started. Slide number 20. All mutual funds have annual operating expenses. And normally the largest portion are the management fees. These are charged yearly as a percentage of the fund's asset values, 0.25% up to 2% every year. And they are paid to the portfolio managers and analysts who make the investment decisions. So what does that mean? So let's say the management fee is 1%. If you have $100 in the mutual fund, they're going to take a buck. If you have $500, they're going to take $5, 1%. If you have $1,000, they're going to take 10 bucks. How does that sound? Huh? Well, it may sound like a lot, but it's a whole lot less than what the banks and the life insurance companies charge. And we'll deal with these in detail as we look at specific examples. The second category is called 12B1 fees. Isn't that a great name? Doesn't that just say it all, folks, 12B1? Not at all does it say it. It's the annual fee to defray advertising, servicing, and distribution costs of the funds, up to 1% per year. Now, in the defense of the mutual fund industry, and it's in the Investment Company Act, at least they have to disclose it. Do banks and insurance companies disclose how much they pay on marketing? No. Does Coca-Cola tell you how much every time you buy a Coke, how much you're paying for advertising? No. And if you ask them, they'll probably say, go look it up. You figure it out. But no, the mutual fund industry must disclose this. And the last category, which is normally the smallest category, but not always, is the accounting and other expenses. In other words, you got to pay the rent, you got to pay the janitors and the website and all the other accountants and bean counters to run the fund. Those are those expenses. Now there's a little line there, and the fourth expense is only for retirement accounts. It's typically 10 bucks a year, I've seen it as high as $30 a year. This is the trustee fee. If you have a Roth IRA or other type of tax qualified account, the IRS requires, as part of the deal, that you do not hold on to the money. It is held by a trustee, a custodian, for the benefit of, you'll see FBO, for the benefit of you. Now, don't worry, folks. They're not going to run away with it. They're a trust company. This is their job. And they hold it for your benefit. And the reason is because the IRS says that it's the way it's got to be if you're going to be taxed or not taxed, if you're going to be tax deferred, or in the case of a Roth IRA, not pay any taxes. So the trustee has to make money, and that's how they make their money. They charge you $10 up to $30 a month. So we won't discuss that one any more than we just did now. Slide number 21. Now, the trading costs are not disclosed in the annual prospectus. This is one of the things that they don't have to disclose. So how does an investor know how much the trading costs are? Well, you can ask them, or an easier way is to look at the annual turnover, which is something you should know anyway about your mutual fund. The annual turnover is a measure of how much trading a mutual fund does, and it's measured in percentage of the amount a portfolio turns over, if that makes any sense, each year. Think about it. If they have 100% turnover, that means within 1 year they will have bought and sold all the stocks or bonds or whatever they're investing in the mutual fund. 50% turnover means it'll take them 2 years, right? Half of it will be turned over. The higher the turnover, of course, the higher the trading cost, because you don't trade for free. Now, they get a whole lot better deal than we do, but they're buying thousands, millions of shares, where we might buy 10. And as we just mentioned, it gives you an idea of how long they hold the investments. If it's 100% turnover, they're holding them an average of 1 year. If it's a 50%, 2 years. Some of them you'll see 200% turnover. What does that mean? That means they are, on average, holding their securities for 6 months. Now, dear students, in my humble opinion, that is not the way a mutual fund should be run. Of course, nobody's paying me $500,000 to start plus bonuses, so I don't get to make the decision. But to me, mutual funds are long-term investments. I like to see turnover of 20-25%. And that means you're holding on to a stock on average about 4 or 5 years. Now, why 3, 4, 5 years is such a magical number, we will discuss much later on when we get to stocks. Some have even lower turnovers, which is great. That's great if they believe that they are holding on to a long-term investment. And so keep aware, make yourself aware of the turnover. It's one of the things I ask you to look up in the annual reports on the assignment. Slide number 22. Load versus no load. As we said in the first presentation, some funds charge a load, which is a fancy, not even a fancy term, it's kind of a silly term, for a sales commission. Anywhere from 3 to 5%. Now, this is used typically to compensate the financial representative, the broker, along with the fund distributor. So if you go to a broker and say, you know, I need help with choosing mutual funds, the broker will most likely not. Actually, there are other ways of screwing. I mean, charging clients, as we're going to see in a bit. Traditionally, they would show you a load fund. Starting in the 70s, actually a little bit before then, there were no load funds. Funds that were traditionally sold directly to shareholders. They do not charge a commission. And the debate, and some people say there's no such thing, there's no debate, you should just always go with a no-load fund. Well, be careful. And no-load funds can wind up costing you more than load funds over time, so you got to be careful. And, of course, the brokers weren't too happy about this. They said, wait a minute. So what happened is they started creating these no-load funds, which were called broker no-load funds, which really weren't no-load funds because they had higher operating expenses. And then the SEC got involved, and oh my goodness, what a mess it made. And that will be the pith, the material that we are going to slog through, dear students, in just a few slides. Yikes. Slide number 23, actually starting right now, slide number 23. So get out your little pieces of paper or the handout from chapter 4 and make notes, because this is tricky. And I'm not going to try to sugarcoat it. Part of it, as I said, is I think the industry is just generally interested, or not everybody in the industry, but many in the industry are just generally happy that it is so difficult to understand what's going on here. There are various types of load funds. The traditional, the very first type of load fund was a front-end load. In fact, at the beginning of the industry, these were the only types of funds out there. You paid a commission when you bought the shares, and your broker got those commissions. And they are now called often Class A as in apple. And they normally, but not always, have lower annual operating expenses than the other classes. So you pay that upfront fee, and then you pay lower fees in perpetuity. You like that word, perpetuity? It means, you know, forever, and it's a great way to spit on your friends. You say, oh, I have a fund that pays low, charges lower fees in perpetuity. And they go, get away from me. I just love words like that. Anyway, let's continue. So that's the Class A shares. Got that? Okay. What's the next share? Class B. And B stands for back-end load. Well, not really, but you can think of it that way. It makes it easy to remember. They are going to charge you a commission when you sell the shares. Now, you might say, well, what's the big deal? What's the difference? Why should I bother? Most B shares, most back-end load funds, have what is called a contingent deferred sales charge, a fancy way of saying that the charge declines over time. I love that word, contingent. Say it. It feels good in your throat when you say contingent. So the first year, it might be 5%. The second year, 4%, 3%, 2%, and then after 5 years, 6 years, you don't pay any sales charge. You understand? This is typical of also annuities, the life insurance products, which we'll take a look at very briefly much later on. But they start at 25% or 20% and take some 20 years to go down. Normally, the back-end load shares pay higher annual operating expenses until the contingent deferred sales charge declines to zero. So what they do is they sneak those fees into the 12B1 fees. We will see this in a few moments. And then, with most companies, eventually the B shares revert or change to the A shares with the lower annual operating expenses. So hang on a minute. I know it's very confusing, but we're going to state it and then show it to you in just a bit. But write these things down, because I'm going to ask you to remember them. You need to understand these because you're taking Introduction to Investments. Slide number 24. The third type of load fund is Class C, which was called no load funds, or sometimes called broker no load funds, but now the no load is crossed out, and we call them load funds. What? I don't understand. I don't understand. Well, you see, the brokers weren't happy about having load shares when there were companies out there saying, ooh, come to us, and you don't have to pay an upfront fee. Bypass the broker. Who needs somebody? Who needs a broker? So they said, come on, we need some kind of way to sell no load funds, or at least call them no load funds, even though they have a load. Well, they don't really have a load. They have no front-end load. They have no back-end load, no front-end commission, no back-end commission. Usually they'll charge you 1% if you redeem the funds within 1 year, which you're not going to do because it's a long-term investment. However, many Class C shares have high annual operating expenses in perpetuity, or for a long time, maybe 10 years. There are those 12B1 fees again, folks. Hence, a Class C without an upfront fee, without a back-end fee, can wind up costing you more than the Class A shares or Class B shares over time. And the Securities Exchange Commission said, we don't like you calling these no-load funds, Mr. Broker, Ms. Broker. If that mutual fund has a 12B1 fee that's greater than 0.25%, then you are not allowed to call it a no-load fund. And people have completely missed the point here. They just said, what? And you're probably going, well, I'm already confused. Go back, stop the present, go back and make sure. A, B, C, it's that easy and then it's that hard. So the brokers are not allowed to call these things no load anymore, because what happens, what the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, the Securities and Exchange Commission has said, is that you've snuck the load in over time by charging them higher annual operating expenses for 10 years or whatever. So they're not allowed to be called no load. Some people still do in the industry. Some brokers still do, but we're not allowed to. Brokers are not allowed to. So, slide number 25. You don't want to deal with a broker. You want to go with the no-load funds. But you like the idea of a broker, so you go to your broker, and your broker says, oh, yes, we have no-load funds. These are called advisor no-load funds. They're Class F shares, or sometimes called Class I shares. The F stands for financial advisor. The I stands for investment advisor. Sometimes they're called FI shares, financial investment advisor shares. These are held in what is called a wrap account, or a management account, or a wealth management account. Doesn't that sound spectacular? You see, you get lower annual operating expenses. You don't pay an upfront fee. You don't pay a back-end fee. But the advisor charges you an extra 1% or 2% every year to manage your account. See, we're not your brokers. Oh, no. We are your wealth managers. And we're going to take 1% or 2% every year forever. You get the feeling, I don't really like these things. I don't think they're in the best interest of the clients, folks. Because you wind up paying far more over the lifetime of your investing career than if you just paid the upfront fee and be done with it. And as a broker, I have no clients that have these wrap accounts. That doesn't mean I never will. I probably never will. I don't think they're in the best interest of the clients. I wouldn't want one if I were a client, and so I have a very difficult time recommending them. In fact, I don't to clients. I would do my best to show them that over the long term they'll do better if they don't have these. And then if they still wanted it, I don't know what I would do. I've never been in that situation yet. But you see, these things are very popular with brokers, folks. They will tell you that, oh, no, this is great. I'm managing your account. I'm worth the 1% or 2% every year. Mm-hmm. Well, usually they'll just sort of mumble it and roar, yeah. Nah. And then finally, slide number 25. The true no-load funds at the bottom of slide. These are mutual fund companies that deal directly with the public. The Securities and Exchange Commission says they may not have a 12B1 fee greater than 0.25%. All right, we won't have a 12B1 fee greater than 0.25%. And we want to bypass the middleman. Who needs a financial advisor? Come directly to us. But that does not mean that the overall fees are low. Over time, a no-load fund can wind up costing you more than a load fund. You must compare the totality, is that a word? Yes. You must compare the annual operating expenses in total. You have to look at the whole picture. And so, let's start by looking at the whole picture for a single mutual fund. Now, this is a very famous mutual fund. It's one of the world's largest. It's called the Growth Fund of America. It was the world's largest for several years. And it's been around for decades and has done pretty well for its investors. They have the various shares, the Class A, the B shares, the C shares, and then they have two, actually, F shares. We're going to just take a look at one out of the two. But the first one is the Class A shares. 5.75%. You go to your broker and they show you the Growth Fund of America. You say, you know, I want a good long-term investment. I'm willing to hang in there for the long term. And he or she shows you the Growth Fund of America and recommends the A shares. Well, 5.75% and is fairly high by today's standards. It actually used to be on the low side. 8.5% was typical, but and some funds still charge that, if you can believe that. But 5.75%, still, it's on the higher side. And what does that mean? That means if you put in $100, they're going to take $5.75. Now, most of that goes to the brokerage company. Some of it goes to the mutual funds distributors. That's how they make their money. And if you put in $50, that'll be $2.88. If you put in $1,000, it'll be $57.50. If you put in $10,000, it'll be $575. If you put in $100,000, once it goes over $25,000, the amount you put in or the amount your account grows to, the maximum, you see it says maximum sales charge, the sales charge is reduced. And we'll see that schedule much later on. So if you are in the lower amount, up to $25,000, you pay 5.75. Then it goes to 5, then it goes to 4.5, and 3.5, until eventually you don't pay anything. If you've got a lot of money to invest, you don't pay any sales charge. That's the way the industry works. My apologies, but it is definitely skewed toward the folks with the big bucks. Now, the 5.75% is paid when you buy the shares. But, remember, every mutual fund has annual operating expenses. And so this mutual fund charges 0.28% for the management fees. These are the people with the top hats who are making the decisions about whether they should buy or sell the individual securities, the stocks, the bonds, whatever. The distribution and or service fees are 0.24%. So 28 cents for management fees for every $100 you have, 24 cents for distributing, servicing, marketing, and the like, and 18 cents, 0.18%, for other expenses. So this mutual fund is charging you 70 cents in perpetuity for every $100 you have in the account. Does that sound like a lot of money? In comparison to other mutual funds in the industry, that's on the low side. That's on the low side. And comparing it to the banks or the life insurance industry, that's really low. They charge 3 or 4, sometimes more percent. But they're not going to show you. They're not going to tell you because they don't have to. Whereas the mutual fund company has to put this information. Where did they put it? They put it in a document called the prospectus. And as a broker, you are required to show the prospectus. You're required to give the prospectus to your potential clients or your existing clients. And then the company will send you a prospectus every year. But nowadays, they don't want to do it. They want you to go online, click here, and say that you've read the prospectus. Does that sound familiar? Oh, yeah, I read all. Right. And they've actually gotten easier to read. They used to be impossible to read. I mean, they just were very, very difficult. Some are still pretty hard to read. Others are much easier now. But somewhere in that prospectus, you're going to see this chart. And the face-to-face class, I hand one out and say, here, take a look at it and pass it around. But, you know, online, I have the links on the class website to the prospectus for this company. Well, actually, for all the funds from this company and for other companies. So they're out there, folks. But do people read them? Most people don't read them, yeah. You go to your broker and you say, well, Ms. Broker, Mr. Broker, I like this mutual fund, but I don't want to pay an upfront fee. And what does your broker say? No problem. Right, there's always no problem, folks. Look at this. We got the Class B shares for you. No upfront fee. Now, if you take the money out in the first year, we're going to charge you 5%. The second year, 4%, 3%, and after 6 years, we're not going to charge you anything, and you're going to leave the money in for the long term, aren't you, Mr. and Mrs. John Q. Investor? You're going to hold on to that money for the long term. Oh, yes, Ms. Broker, yes, I am. So you won't pay any contingent deferred sales charge. You won't pay any back-end load. So you say, well, this sounds interesting. What are the management fees? 28 cents. 0.28% on every $100 that you have, 28 cents of $1,000, $2.80, you got it. And then, wait a minute, what happened here? The distribution fees went from 0.24% up to 1%. You see what they're doing? They've snuck that front-end load into the 12B1 fees. Uh-huh. And you pay those extra 12B1 fees, in this case, for this company, for 8 years. And then the B shares become A shares. The other expenses are the same at 18 cents. So you're paying, more, twice as much for 8 years, $1.46 for every $100 you have in the account. So you see, they're going to get you one way or the other. You don't pay the upfront fee, and you probably won't pay the back-end fee because you're going to hang on to them, but you're going to pay every year an extra amount. Uh-huh. So you go to your broker, and you say, well, Ms. Broker, I don't want to pay the upfront fee, and Ms. Broker, I don't want to pay the back-end fee. And she says, no problem. Sit down. For you, we have the Class C shares. Look, no upfront fee. Well, if you take the money out within 1 year, we're going to hit you with a 1% fee, and you're not going to do that because this is a long-term investment, right? Oh, yes, Ms. Broker. So you're not going to pay an upfront fee. You're not going to pay a back-end fee. The management fees are 0.28%. That's the same as the Class A and the Class B shares, but there are the 12B1 fees. 1%, yes, and they do that for 10 years, even longer than the B shares. The other expenses are a little bit more, so $1.50. $1.50 for every $100 you have in the account for 10 years. So you go to your broker and you say, I don't want to pay the upfront fee. I don't want to pay the back-end fee. I want lower annual operating expenses. And he says, you already know it. He's, no problem. Sit down, Bobby. We got, but for you, something good. No upfront fee, no back-end fee. Look at that. 0.28 management fees, the same as all the others, and zero 12B1 fees. 16 cents for other expenses, so you pay lower than any of the others. 44 cents. 44 cents. What a deal. What a deal. No back-end fee, no upfront fee, lower annual operating expenses, and we'll charge you an extra 1 or 2% for every year that you have the money in the fund. And what was that, Ms. Broker? We'll charge you a 1 to 2%. Some of them 2% every year. Wealth management fee. In perpetuity. Yikes. Yeah, well, that's what a lot of brokerage firms are pushing these days, these wealth management, these wrap accounts. Okay, so that was the Growth Fund of America. Got it? Now we'll take a look at another fund, Alliance. Remember Alliance? They were one of the companies that were, two people. Two people at Alliance, and it tarred the entire company. And this is a competitor to the Growth Fund of America called Large Cap, that means big companies, Growth Fund. And so we see the first difference, the maximum sales charge, is only 4.25%. So 1.5% less than the previous competitor, the Growth Fund of America. Oh, looks pretty interesting, right? Well, look at their annual operating expenses. 75 cents for the management fees, 30 cents per $100 for the 12B1 fees, and 20 cents for other expenses. So this company is going to charge you $1.25 in perpetuity every year, where the other company was only charging you 70 cents. You see? So sure, the upfront fee is a little less, but you're going to pay more over time for the shares. The 12B1 fee, the B shares have the same deal. The maximum sales charge for the previous company was 5%. This one's 4%, and it goes down faster, 4, 3, 2, 1. But, again, there's the management fees, the same as the Class A shares, but look at what happened to the 12B1 fees, 1%, you gotcha. And then 34 cents for other expenses, now we're above 2%, 2.09%. Now we're getting close to what banks and life insurance, not there, we're not there yet, but we're getting close to what banks and life insurance companies charge for your annual operating expenses, although they're not required to disclose them. And the Class C shares have the same deal as the previous. No upfront fee, 1% if you take the money out within a year, but that's, you're not going to do that. It's a mutual fund. You leave it in for years. And the 75 cents, a dollar, 30 cents, $2, and 5 cents, and I forget how long the Alliance C shares stay C shares. I apologize. I could go look it up, but I won't. I got to keep going. The Class F shares, the financial advisor shares, have no upfront fee, no back-end fee. There you go. Again, no 12B1 fee. But the 75 cents that goes to the people in the top hats making the investment decisions, 28 cents to pay for the lights and the rent and the janitors and the like, and the accounting and the website and all that stuff, 1%. So sure, much less than the others, but remember the wrap account, remember the wrap fee, the wealth management fee, the brokerage wealth management fee that they tack 1 to 2% on top of this. Okay, now, here is a very famous, now infamous, mutual fund. And it used to be a tremendous example because they didn't have A shares, they didn't have CB shares, they had primary shares, they called them primary shares. And they were marketed by brokers as having no loads. Well, what did the Securities and Exchange Commission say? Here are the primary shares. They used to be called primary, now they're called C. If you have a 12B1 fee greater than 0.25%, you are now not allowed to call it a no-load fund. And so the Legg Mason Value Trust, Legg Mason's a company based in Baltimore. Their Value Trust is their very famous, now infamous fund, and we'll see why later on. Said, all right. So they created a Class A share, very similar to the first one we saw, 5.75%. Management fees are 68 cents. That goes to the people who have the top hats and decide what stocks to buy or to sell. The 12B1 fees for the Class A shares are very similar to the other companies' Class A shares, 0.25%. Other expenses, 11%. 0.11%, I'm sorry, not 11%. 0.11%, 11 cents. $1.04, but these are relatively new. They added those just a few years ago. The Class C shares are the ones that have been around for decades, and they had a deferred sales charge of 0.95%, about 1% if you took the money out within a year, but you're not going to do that. You don't want to do that, folks. Don't do that to the mutual fund company. Put it in there. Leave it in there. It makes it difficult for them to manage the money, because you say, hey, I'm putting $10,000 in, I want you to manage it, and then 6 months later you take it out, thank you very much. So don't do that, leave it in there. So there's their management fees, there's their 12B1 fees, again, of more than 25 basis points, as people in the industry will say. It's a fancy way of saying 0.25%. And other expenses. Now, I'm a cynical kind of guy, and I'm always looking for where's the angle. The Securities Exchange Commission says that I can't call it a no-load fund if this number right here is greater than 0.25%. Well, why don't I just leave that at 0.25% and bump this number up? And probably the SEC would come back and say, now, guys, that's not what we had in mind. I don't know. I'm not in the industry to that extent. where I'm dealing with the regulators and making decisions about how the mutual fund is going to be run, but it sure seems to me that all they had to do was move the fee from the 12b1 fee and put it down here or put it up here, but there's probably rules against that, so I don't know. Now, they have a class FI shares, they call them, financial investment advisor shares. Again, no upfront fee, no back-end fee, low annual operating expenses. Well, not as low as the class A shares, as the other ones were. 68 cents here, 25 cents, $14.07. But again, you have to tack on the 1 or 2% that the investment advisor, the brokerage firm is going to charge you. And then they have shares called institutional. Huh. Well, what does that mean? Do you have to be institutionalized to own these shares? Well, later on. But they certainly look pretty good. They look the cheapest. And now for something completely different. I'm a big Monty Python fan, folks. And now for something completely different. Slide number 29. Vanguard. The world's largest mutual fund company. And no more mutual fund other than this one right here was responsible for, no one mutual fund more than this one was responsible for their success. It's called the Vanguard 500 Index Fund. Wait a minute. No upfront fees, no back-end fees. Look at those management fees. 14 cents. Lower than anything we've ever seen. Well, they better be low. And we'll tell you why in a second. But this, no distribution fees to speak of. Well, a $20 annual fee if your account is less than $10,000. Unless you enroll in electronic delivery and then they waive the $20 annual fee. The other expenses to keep the lights on and the like are 3 cents. So 17 cents. Much lower than anything we've ever seen. Okay, what's going on? How can they do that? Well, it's pretty straightforward, folks. They don't have any people in the top hats. Huh? Right. This is an index fund. This fund does no research. They simply buy all the 500 stocks. That's why it's called the 500 Index. In the Standard & Poor's 500 Index. And what's the Standard & Poor's 500 Index? Wait till we get to Chapter 3. We'll discuss it in detail. This is one of the problems with doing mutual funds before we go through stocks and bonds. And some people, some books, and some professors will wait until after you've gone through stocks and bonds to deal with mutual funds. I don't think that's a good idea. I think it's a good idea to see mutual funds first, and then we'll backfill some of the things that are a little bit tricky. Why? Because mutual funds are so important for the vast majority of us. So what are they doing? They're looking at a list of 500 stocks that's created by a company called Standard & Poor's, the company that wrote your book, by the way. It's owned by McGraw-Hill. And they also own magazines and newspapers and television stations. And so they look at this list of 500 stocks, and they buy the stocks on the list. And if the stocks aren't on the list, they sell the stocks on the list. You or I could run this fund, providing we can read. The term for this is passive management. Now, folks, I want you to remember that term also, very important, as opposed to active management. The previous three mutual funds were all actively managed by the people in the top hats. This fund does no research. Now, we'll discuss this in detail as we go along. But index funds are usually true no-load mutual funds. And usually, but not always, have very low fees. Why? Because they can. If you're not sending people all around the world knocking on companies' doors and looking at their competitors and their suppliers and their bankers and their customers, then you don't have to charge accordingly. It to run a mutual fund well, folks, given that it's a global economy, it costs a lot of money. If you're running an index fund, it doesn't cost you hardly anything because you don't have to do any research. And Vanguard became the world's largest mutual fund company on the back of these, of specifically, well, all their index funds, but this one was their most popular. And it's not as though they exist in a vacuum. Let's take a look at slide number 30, Fidelity. Fidelity's the number two company, but you know what? For decades, Fidelity was the number one mutual fund company. And they poo-pooed indexing until Vanguard overtook them as the number one mutual fund company. And you can just imagine the two words that came out of the boardroom at Fidelity. Fidelity's based in Boston. Vanguard's based in King of Prussia, Malvern, outside Philadelphia. There's actually a city outside Philadelphia called King of Prussia. And that's where they're based. And so Fidelity decided, well, if you can't beat them, exactly. Fidelity responded by eliminating all sales loads, creating their own index funds, and lowering their fees below Vanguard. So look at what we see here. Here, no upfront fee, no back-end fee, 0.025%. Right, yeah, exactly. 2.5 cents for every $100. Again, there's a low balance fee. In this case, it's $12 if your account is below $2,000, and then 7 cents for the other expenses. So a little less than 10 cents for every $100 you have in the account. How low can you go? It reminds me of Limbo, right? Now, you may think, wow, all these index funds are great. They're going to have low annual operating expenses. Wouldn't it be just like the industry to pull the rug out from underneath you? It is. In your, and this is why it is so important, folks, that you understand this. Because in your 401k or your 403b or other employer-sponsored plan, the people in the blue suits, three-piece suits with the Gucci shoes, are going to slip index funds in there with much higher annual operating expenses. Why? Because they can. And they get a kickback from those companies. And you would think, who would do that to their employees? Well, a lot of times the folks in the human resources, they don't understand what's going on either. And this is exactly what the people at our group, called the Fringe Benefit Consortium, which is a front for nationwide insurance on your backside. This is exactly what they did to us at Southwestern Community College. And they didn't expect a goofball like me in the audience saying, what are you doing with these index funds charging 90 basis points, 90 cents for every $100, where Vanguard's charging 17 cents and Fidelity's charging 10 cents. This was way back in 2002. And they said, we're going to deal with that. Don't worry, we're going to deal with that. Yeah, they dealt with it. They didn't deal with it. They got a different company. They got their own company. They had Galtmore or Gartmore, whatever it's called, and then they snuck in their own Index 500 from Nationwide, which with much higher fees. And so you, dear students, are going to be the person who shows the emperor has no shoes. You're going to disnude them, or whatever the word is, disrobe them in front of all your fellow employees. And remember, they're going to say, ooh, where'd you learn how to do this? Boy, you're smart. And you're going to say, yeah, right, exactly. Good. And that's why you can see I'm on a mission. You understand I'm on a mission. But you have to be careful because these people are pretty powerful and they threaten me. They really did. And believe it or not, they threatened me to keep my mouth shut. And I said, oh, interesting. I'm looking forward to you. I'm looking forward to you suing me. I would just love it. Please do it. It would be so cool. What publicity that would create. Anyway, and because, you know, I'm lucky in that I'm a full-time professor, I have basically security. But if you were part-time and they went after you, you really have no security. They could just simply not renew. They could ask you not to come back next year, and they don't have to give a reason why. But if they went after me, then, you see, and I know that gets into a little political about why should professors be protected. But you see how I couldn't tell you the truth if I was worried about being fired. And that's more important than society. You're right, I agree. Some professors, they misuse that protection. Nothing's perfect, folks. But I can tell you the truth because I'm not worried about being fired. In fact, I would welcome their lawsuit. Slide number 31. Okay, so now let's go back and take a look at another piece out of the prospectus, and that is what it's going to cost you in dollars over 1, 3, 5, and 10 years. All prospectuses must include this. And the Securities and Exchange Commission says you must use a $10,000 investment with a 5% return. And notice the word hypothetical. It means, you know, basically made up. So here's the Growth Fund of America. We put in $10,000. Well, remember, we had to pay that upfront fee of 5.75%. What does that mean? Well, that's $575 right off the bat. So right off the bat, we are at a much higher level than the other two classes. Let's ignore the F shares for now. The 3 years, the A shares still are more expensive than the B and C shares, but you notice they're catching up. After 5 years, the A shares are still more expensive, but the others are pretty darn close. And look at what happens after 10 years. Exactly. If you're in it for the long term, which is the best deal? Well, it turns out that often the A shares are the best deal over the long term. In fact, if you as a broker show your clients the B or the C shares and they decide on those, in the client brokerage agreement, you have to get them to acknowledge that it has been explained to them that if they use the B or the C shares, they're going to probably wind up spending more in terms of annual operating expenses than the A shares. You see, so the Securities Exchange Commission is very much aware of what's going on. Now, let's deal with the F shares. And I use the F1 shares here, which are even more expensive than the F2 shares. I should have used the F2, but I apologize. Notice it says exclude the advisor's fee. Right, exactly. Although it looks as though the F shares are the best deal, this does not include the advisor's annual fee. Adding the advisor's typical fee of 1 to 2% per year would easily add an additional $1,200 to $2,400 to the total cost. So, you're going to go with the F shares? I have a little story, which I hope you will allow me to indulge you with. A client of mine was being solicited by folks at her church. And they were showing her the wealth management account. And I was trying to explain to her how they're charging her. And they were charging 2%. And I said, you know, that's a charge in perpetuity, forever. And so she was a little unnerved. She went back to them and explained that she wasn't quite sure about this, and they dropped it from 2% to 1%. No question asked, right then and there. So, we can do 1%. And she went with them because they were the church, and I'm a godless, you know. So, hey, how do you compete with Jesus? I don't know. I don't try. So be careful, folks. They are out there, and if you decide that that is the best course of action for you, go right ahead. If you think your advisor is worth it. But you're going to pay for that. You're going to pay for that. But they send you a bottle of wine on your birthday and take you out golfing, and that's how the industry works. Slide number 32. The Legg Mason Value Trust shows us the same thing. Over the long term, the A shares wind up costing less than the so-called, or used to be called, no-load shares, the C shares. The financial intermediate shares looked like a good deal, but again, you got to add the 1 to 2%, which could be $1,200, $2,400 or more, well, more actually, over the 10 years. Now, the institutional class looks great compared to the others. How do I get them? Well, for starters, are you a large pension fund, a university endowment, or a tax-exempt charity? Oh, no. And, oh, by the way, do you have at least $1 million to invest with us? Oh, well, so much for the institutional class shares. And so now let's take a look at our friend the index fund. The low-cost index fund, not the high-cost index funds. The fees for passively managed index funds will almost always be less than actively managed funds. Vanguard created another class called the Admiral class with even lower funds, and they used to be available with a minimum of $100,000. Right? Any takers? Well, a few years ago, they lowered the minimum to $10,000. So if you have $10,000, you get the Admiral shares, and look at how much cheaper compared to the other mutual funds. But they better be cheaper, folks, because they're not doing anything. They're not doing any research. They're not actively managed. They're passively managed. And do you remember we discussed the exchange-traded funds? Well, they often have fees lower than their index funds because they're doing even less. The brokerage firms are keeping track of who owns the funds, so they don't even have to do that. And the ETF that Vanguard has created that tracks the total U.S. stock market has an expense ratio of 5 cents. How low can you go? And remember, if you go through Vanguard, if you go through Fidelity and some of the other companies, and open a brokerage account at their brokerage firm, which is a sister company, but it says Vanguard, says Fidelity, they won't even charge you the commission. Very cool. Now, we discussed a detail a few slides ago when we were looking at the Growth Fund of America called the breakpoint sales reduction. And what does it mean? Well, we said that the maximum sales charge was 5.75%. But as soon as you purchase or accumulate $25,000 in your account, then that amount goes down to 5%. When you hit $50,000, it goes to 4.5%. $100,000, 3.5%. $250,000, 2.5%. $500,000, 2%. $750,000, 1.5%. And then when you have either accumulated or purchased $1 million, you pay no sales charge. And I know what some of you are thinking. Thank you very much, industry. Right. I apologize on behalf of the industry, but the industry is definitely skewed toward people who are very wealthy. That's who they want. In fact, I remember one person saying that their brokerage firm didn't want to deal, the broker, the individual broker, did not want to deal with anybody who had less than $500,000 to invest. And in fact, they were going to change the rule and it was going to be $750,000. That would be the least amount that this person would go after. And when I hear that, I just think, this is just ridiculous. Personally, as a broker, I am happy when somebody puts $50 a month away. They're the people who need the help the most. If you've got over $750,000 or $1 million, do you need that much help? You don't need it as much as the people who don't have anything. So I'm very happy with $50 a month. And in fact, sometimes the clients will say, well, how do you get paid? I say, I explain, you know, okay, here's how I get paid. And I explain the A shares and the B shares. And they say, that's it? That's all you're going to get? And I said, yeah, that's what I'm going to get. And they go, okay. Yeah. Now, another thing, slide number 34 on the bottom. Some brokers fail to inform their clients of this feature, of this sales reduction, this sale breakpoint sales reductions. And instead, what they would do is as the client approached the breakpoint, they would advise them to start another fund in a different company. And when I first heard this, I could not believe it. I was simply astounded. Do you understand what they're doing? They are trying to keep the sales charge as high as possible. Again, I apologize on behalf of my industry, folks. Some of the things that go on are not always in the best interest of the clients. Now, this is, of course, not allowed. The broker can be disciplined and be fined and ultimately be barred from the industry, but still, it's just unbelievable that you would do that to your client, but that's what's out there. Get a good referrer, for referral if you're going to use a broker. Slide number 35. This slide, dear students, shows us the contingent deferred sales charge reduction over time. And these, again, are using the Class B shares of the Growth Fund of America. The first year, if you take your money out within the first year, they will charge you 5%. Years 2 and 3, 4%. The fourth year, 4%. The fifth year, 2%. Sixth year, 1%. After 6 years, you pay no contingent deferred sales charge, no back-end fee, but remember, you paid more, or you're paying more, through the 12B1 fees until the B shares become A shares, which in this case take 8 years. Some other companies, Alliance, I think it's only 4 years, they revert to the A shares. Every company, every mutual fund's a little different, but you see the contingent deferred sales charge going down over time, and as we said, annuities have this kind of deal, but it usually starts at 20% or more. Yeah. Woo! Yeah. Are you tired yet, folks? Yeah, I know. I know. You've got to know this. And I'm going to ask you on the exam, but more importantly, you got to know this when you walk into that 403B or 401K employee meeting where the people in the three-piece suits are going to try to snow you. I mean, going to try to explain to you how the system works. You have to know how you're being charged. And you're going to explain it to your family and friends when they come and ask you, and you're going to look like a genius. All right, so now that you know everything you need, well, not quite, but almost everything you need to know about how you're being charged with mutual funds, which one would you choose? Here's the deal. I'm going to give you $10,000 10 years ago, and I'm going to ask you to make one of four choices. The Class A shares of the Growth Fund of America or the Alliance Large Cap Growth Fund, knowing that we'll wind up spending the least amount of fees if we choose the A shares and hold on to them for the long time. The Legg Mason Value Trust Class C, because they didn't have the Class A shares and they were called primary class at that time. Or the ultra cheap Vanguard Index 500 fund with our $10,000. And we'll compare that to the Standard & Poor's 500 Index. And, of course, in the face-to-face class, we have the A, B, C, D cards that they hold up. And at the university, you just press a button, and all the A's show up, and the number of B's show up, and you can change your mind, and we don't have that at Southwestern. Okay. Anyway, which one would you choose? Well, let's see how you did. Fees are important, but they certainly do not tell you the whole story. When comparing mutual funds, you must look at many attributes, not the least of which are the rates of returns, preferably over longer periods of time. Now, what you find is that these two actively managed funds beat the Standard & Poor's 500, a very difficult thing to do. Why? Because that is their benchmark. And the Standard & Poor's 500 is a little broader than what the Growth Fund of America and the Alliance Large Cap Growth Fund's universe is. They're mostly growth companies, where the Standard & Poor's 500 has growth and has value and has a few other types of companies. And we'll discuss those in detail in Chapter 5, so hence another problem with doing mutual funds beforehand. But still, that's their benchmark. When you're studying and doing the assignment for annual, the mutual fund annual reports, I'm going to ask you to look up the benchmark. And some mutual funds have more than one because they don't really fit any one benchmark. So they'll show you more than one benchmark, more than one index. But think about it, folks. Remember, the mutual fund has fees. Every mutual fund has fees, especially the ones that are actively managed, because they have, you know, large, some of them, organizations, some based all around the world, and they're going around and doing all that research. So they have to make the Standard & Poor's 500 index return and then beat it by the fees just to break even. That's why mutual funds have a hard time beating their respective index. It's not that the mutual funds are poorly run. It's just that they have to do better than the index. They have one hand tied behind their back right from the start. Plus, in some of the companies, the pressure is so great that the mutual fund managers are basically, you know, they know that if they do well in the first couple of years, they will get to stay there. And if they don't do well, well, then they're out of there. And not all companies are like this. Other companies move their managers along very slowly. But so they tend to take large bets. Well, it's great if it works well. It's not so great if it doesn't work well. Well, here are two mutual fund companies that have done well over the long term. 10 years is pretty good long term. And they've beaten their index. Now, if you had more than the $10,000 to invest and got the better deals on the sales charge, you would have done even better, right? At net asset value. If you had the $1 million, you would have gotten, in this case, 8.31% for the Growth Fund of America and 8.94% for the Alliance Large Cap Growth Fund. You see, but most of us mere mortals don't have those types of amounts to put in. Now, here's the Legg Mason Value Trust. And why do I pick on them? Well, because a few years ago, folks, they had destroyed everybody else. Bill Miller, and we'll come back to Mr. Bill Miller, he's since retired, but he had just clobbered everybody. He had beaten the Standard & Poor's 500 index in 15 years in a row. Unbelievable. Unheard of. And this was, as we said, a very famous mutual fund, now infamous, because in 2006 and in 2007 and in 2008, he started to lose his touch. And then 2009, he came back, but then 2010, 2011, oh man, did he just stink up the joint. So the takeaway from this is if you go with an actively managed fund, you could do better or, you know, similar to the respective index that you're being measured against, the market, so to speak. Or you could do significantly worse. And poor Mr. Miller, I don't feel too badly for him, but he, you know, he fell from grace, certainly. It was very, very, very difficult, I'm sure. I'm sorry, he's not happy about it, folks, even though he retired with a lot of money. But here is what would have happened if you had put your money into the Standard & Poor's, I'm sorry, the Vanguard Index 500 fund. Because remember, you can't put your money into the Standard & Poor's 500 index. I mean, you just can't buy an index. And the idea behind the index fund and the exchange-traded funds that are also index funds is, yeah, we can't match the fund, but we can get pretty darn close by lowering the fees. So you see? And the cool part about this is that you have choices. And some people might say, cool, I'm staying with the index funds. I want low cost. And other people say, no, I want to go with the actively managed funds. And we'll discuss in detail more later, in detail, we'll discuss more about this and how some people will say you should only go with index funds. They're the perfect investments. And already, whenever you hear that, you know, fail safe or something like that, your ears should prick up because nothing the humans have ever created is perfect. And the same thing is true with index funds. That doesn't mean you shouldn't use them, but you need to know the downsides, the disadvantages. There are advantages to all investments, and there are disadvantages to all investments. So, let's continue. Here is where we check for comprehension, and again, this is more for the on the face-to-face classes where they raise up their ABC shares, ABCD cards. These mutual funds have an upfront sales load. They do not have an upfront sales load. Instead, they assess a decreasing back-end load if you withdraw your money within 6 years. So the annual operating expense is higher courtesy of the 12b1 fees. All right? They have no upfront fee, but they have a back-end fee, a decreasing back-end fee that you pay 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, but the annual operating expense is higher. Which one of these? The back end are Class B, and they then normally revert to A shares after 6, 8 years, or depending on the company. So that's that contingent deferred sales charge that starts at 5% down to 0 or 4% down to 0. Slide number 38. These shares do not have an upfront fee and only a 1% back-end fee if you redeem them within 1 year. The advisor called them no load, but you notice that their annual operating expense is higher than other share classes, again, courtesy of those ubiquitous 12B1 fees. What are these? Class F shares. Exactly. No upfront fee, no back-end fee, as long as you leave them in there for a year. But they have higher annual operating expenses, and the broker's not allowed to call them no load, but some of the brokers have been in the industry so long, they just do it out of habit. Slide number 39. Your advisor, your financial advisor in the three-piece suit and the Gucci shoes, tells you that these shares have no sales fee, and a very low annual operating expenses. She mumbles something about wealth management. These shares are the A, B, C, or the F or I shares. Right, these are the financial investment advisor shares. She also did her best not to explain to you that her brokerage firm will charge you an extra 2% each year. But she'll take you golfing and send you a bottle of wine on your birthday and send you tickets to the Opera or Chargers or whatever. So it all makes sense. Right? Okay, good. Now, are you experts in the fees for mutual funds? I certainly hope so. I want you to go back and drown yourself in these things, folks, so that you know them. Next up, we'll discuss the types of mutual funds. See you in our next presentation.